place in the life of Jacob, although we've been looking at the whole family. Genesis chapter 27, and we read from verse 1 through to verse 40. Genesis 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." "Here I am," he answered. Isaac said, "I am now an old man and don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your weapons, your quiver and bow, and go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like, and bring it to me to eat, so that I may give you my blessing before I die." Now Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, 'Bring me some game and prepare me some tasty food to eat, so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die.' Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me two choice young goats so that I can prepare some tasty food for your father just the way he likes it. Then take it into your father to eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies." Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am a man with smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing." His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go and get them for me." So he went and got them and brought them to his mother. And she prepared some tasty food, just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which she had in the house, and put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed to her son Jacob the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and said, "My father." "Yes, my son," he answered, "who is it?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" "The Lord your God gave me success," he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near so that I can touch you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not." Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau, so he blessed him. "Are you really my son Esau?" he asked. "I am," he replied. Then he said, "My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing." Jacob brought it to him and he ate. And he brought some wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come here, my son, and kiss me." So he went to him and kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." After Isaac finished blessing him, and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father. Then he said to him, "My father, sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." His father Isaac asked him, "Who are you?" "I am your son," he answered, "your firstborn, Esau." Isaac trembled violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came, and I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed." When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me too, my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing." Esau said, "Isn't he rightly named Jacob? He has deceived me these two times. He took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing." Then he asked, "Haven't you reserved any blessing for me?" Isaac answered Esau, "I have made him Lord over you, and have made all his relatives his servants. And I have sustained him with grain and new wine. So what can I possibly do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father." Then Esau wept aloud. His father Isaac answered him, "Your dwelling will be away from the earth's richness, away from the dew of heaven above. You will live by the sword, and you will serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you will throw his yoke from off your neck." Amen, and may God add his blessing to this public reading of his holy word. And now let us worship God with our offering. Every time I hear that particular hymn, I'm reminded of the fact that Jim Elliot, along with others, sang that hymn. It was the last hymn that they sang as they made their way to reach out to the Auca Indians in South America, and as many of you will know, they were martyred during the course of that particular expedition. But it was a hymn for them of tremendous assurance in the God who had led them safe thus far, and the God who would take them home should trouble befall them. Now then, can I turn your attention to Genesis chapter 27, the passage we read together earlier. I wonder, have you ever played the card game Happy Families? If you have, then you will know that all of the faces illustrate illustrated on those cards share one thing in common. Each character has a grin cut from ear to ear across their face. There is something false and unreal about these fixed smiles. It can so easily disguise the selfish rivalry and the pettiness and the selfishness and the fallenness which intrudes into so much of our family lives. Tolstoy famously observed in the opening lines of Anna Karenina, "All happy families are alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way." And the Bible is refreshingly honest in showing us the ways in which each of the Bible families that it portrays and depicts are unhappy in their own ways. They wear no false smiles on their faces. We see them as they really are, warts and all. And reading through a story such as this, we need to guard against two quite distinct extremes: giving undue sympathy to or expressing unwarranted criticism of the lives of the characters involved. We mustn't make excuses where they are unwarranted, and at the same time we mustn't make unjust and uncharitable judgments. We have to steer a middle course between those extremes. When we begin to examine the lives of biblical characters, what we so often discover, though we don't really like admitting it, is that as we look upon them, we are looking into a mirror that reflects our own heart condition. And the amazing thing, as we pointed out last week, is that God works in such alien environments, and often despite them, in order to achieve his own objective. Now I want us to look at the characters involved in chapter 27, and we turn our attention first of all to Isaac in his old age. Some people, as they get on in years, are still living life to the full. They are enjoying active and fruitful lives. Last week on my way to hospital, I turned on the radio and heard Barbara Cartland being interviewed. She's 93 years of age and was describing how she had just finished her 600th book. Now, I have never read Barbara Cartland, but I certainly was obliged to admire the industry of a person of her age. On the other hand, some people seem to take an unnecessary delight in lying down prematurely to the onslaught of frailty and advancing years. They are very self-preoccupied individuals. They will often have their family dancing in attendance upon them, fussing over them, catering for their every whim, when they are not really as frail as they pretend. I want to suggest to you this evening that Isaac was such a man. Do you know that Isaac was on his deathbed for 40 years? He took a long, long time to die. He seems to have been the kind of man who would gladly take advantage of that kind of situation. And one of the things Isaac did as he lay in his bed was to plot and scheme how he would be able to pass on the coveted blessing to his favorite son Esau, in spite of the fact that God had made it very clear that the blessing was to go to Jacob. Isaac, of course, knew that if he attempted to give this blessing publicly and openly, the whole household would erupt. Rebekah would stick up for Jacob's rights and make his life miserable. And so Isaac decided the blessing should be given secretly. Normally the bestowal of such a blessing was a joyful public occasion. But Isaac robbed it of all of that and reduced it to a shabby, underhanded ceremony. And you will notice that this blessing was to revolve around a meal. Indeed, the blessing was secondary to the meal as far as Isaac was concerned. Not a time of family celebration, that would be the normal practice, but a case of Isaac's selfish indulgence of his own physical appetite. I wonder, can you imagine someone celebrating Christmas and chewing away at their leg of turkey under the covers of their bedclothes, while the rest of the family was oblivious to all that was going on? They didn't even know there was Christmas dinner being served. Such a secret, selfish celebration would disgrace Christmas and make it sour, would it not? But this is the kind of thing that Isaac is doing here. And in the light of this example that he gives, perhaps we should not have been surprised to discover earlier that Esau sold his birthright for a mess of pottage or a bowl of stew. He learned from his father. Parents, we need to think long and hard about the kind of examples that we are setting for our children. For we can be sure of one thing. They are most likely to copy the worst of them. And that is precisely what we find happening here. Isaac may have hoped that the responsibility of the blessing would have transformed his son's character, create a deeper spiritual appetite within his heart. You will remember last week how we indicated that the eldest son Esau had little spiritual insight or concern or appetite. But this kind of thinking, give him some advantage, give him some blessing, and he'll begin to live up to the responsibilities, is fatally flawed. It is ever a recipe for disaster. And this has ever been the case within the church. On more than one occasion, I've heard people suggest, make so-and-so an elder. Now it's true, they don't come to church very often. But make him an elder, and once he has that responsibility, then he'll change. He'll begin to live up to his spiritual responsibilities. And of course, you and I know that things don't work that way. But we haven't yet touched the very root of Isaac's problem. It was one of defiance. God had made clear his intention to bless the younger son Jacob and bestow upon him the promised blessings, not least that through his line would come the Messiah, the Savior of the world. Isaac chooses to disagree with God. Indeed, he seeks to outwit him and outmaneuver him and foist his own selfish will upon the purposes of God. In seeking to dispense his blessing secretly and against the known will of God, Isaac sought to defy him. He was secretly seeking to shake his fist in the face of God. And before we raise our hands in horror, we need to ask ourselves if we can see our face in Isaac's mirror. Have there been occasions in the past, or are we currently engaged in doing precisely this? God has made his will unequivocally clear to us, and we have sought to re-root it. We have sought to divert it to suit our own selfish ends and desires. That's Isaac. They say walls have ears. Well, this was certainly true of Isaac's tent. For as we turn our attention to Rebecca for a moment, we discover a woman with her ear to the wall. Now, I have read that homes usually take on the chief characteristics of the mother. And if that is so, then the friction and suspicion and distrust which so characterized this family can be traced in great part to Rebecca. Have you noticed that no one in this household trusted anyone else? Isaac didn't trust his wife, and Rebecca didn't trust Isaac. Jacob didn't trust his father and knew his father didn't trust him. Neither of the brothers trusted the other. The principal characteristic of this home was suspicion. What an environment to grow up in. But it was created in great part by the woman who is seen crouching here at the door of the tent as Isaac speaks with Esau. Now, Rebecca's real failure was spiritual in its nature. She had every right to cling to the promise of God concerning Jacob, despite the fact that her husband had willfully rejected that promise. She had every right to cling to it and say, God has promised blessing for Jacob, God will bless him. Her fault lay in failing to trust God to keep his promise. And she decided to get that promise her way, to fulfill God's will through her scheming. Oh, how much of the mother is in the son. If Esau was like his father, Jacob was like his mother. Some might argue that through her scheming and planning, Isaac did indeed bless Jacob instead of Esau? Oh, yes. But at what a price to all concerned. It sowed such bitter seeds of hatred in Esau's heart that later on we will read he was determined to kill his brother Jacob. It resulted in Jacob being sent away from the family home for his own safety. And he was away for a period of 20 years. And this is what it cost Rebecca. She would never see the son that she loved so much again. She would die before his return. What a price to pay for her scheming. And to think that God intended to give this blessing to Jacob all along and would have done so without her intervention. When we attempt to fulfill God's will our way, depending in the energy of the flesh, rather than trusting in the God of promise, things will invariably backfire. This has ever been the case through God's historic dealing with men and women. Think for a moment of Moses, who was to learn precisely this lesson some centuries later. The writer to the Hebrews tells us that his parents recognized that he was a proper child, a child of destiny, a child with a particular purpose to fulfill given him by God. And you can be sure that Moses' mother would have passed that kind of information on to him from his earliest years. And then that fateful day came, when Moses saw his people experiencing great hardship under the hands of the Egyptian taskmasters, and he killed one of the Egyptians. He reasoned, God has called me to be the deliverer of this people. I will just get on with that job right now. And he killed the Egyptian. Now, if he was expecting that to inspire a revolution in Egypt, it never took place. Instead, he had to run for his life into the desert of Midian, and he cooled his heels there for a period of 40 years, learning the all-important lesson that God's work must be done His way. God's work needs to be done in the power of His Spirit and not by the energy of human flesh. Far better to wait for God at the beginning than to needlessly complicate our life. And that's a lesson that is not easy to learn. Now, Isaac's willful stubbornness created in Esau's heart unrealistic hopes. Just think of Esau for a second or two. He had already demonstrated his contempt for his birthright, selling it to Jacob for a dish of stew. But now, if his father's death was as imminent as he seemed to suggest, then the material benefits which came with the blessing, as well as a little bit of spiritual insurance, would have seemed welcome. And Esau reflects the attitude of so many people today, who eagerly stretch out their hands for the blessings and the benefits of God, but who have absolutely no intention of living a life of faith and of obedience. They seek to divorce the blessings that God can give with a life of discipleship and a life of obedience in his service. And all that Isaac served to do here in this little escapade is to raise the hopes of his son Esau, only to dash them again. Offering to him what he had no right to offer to him, increasing his bitter disappointment and embittering further his relationship with his brother. Now let's say something about Jacob. It's easy for us to forget that Jacob at this stage was not a young, foolish teenager. I was surprised, I must confess, when I was looking up ages, as we find them laid out here in these chapters, and reading commentaries, that at this time Jacob was probably a man in his 70s. I found that staggering. He wasn't a youngster. He wasn't a teenager. Jacob was a mature man. And you'll notice that Jacob had certain reservations about his mother's plot. Not that he was against deception in principle. He was, you will remember, a firm believer in that philosophy and teaching which states that the end justifies the means. Nor is he reluctant to take advantage of someone whom he considers to be a senile old man. He is without pity for his father in this situation. His sole objection is based on fearful self-interest. Look at verse 12. He is concerned that some curse will fall upon him if the deception is discovered. It's getting found out that really bothered Jacob. Not deceiving, but getting found out in his deceit. A great many people express grief and sorrow over their sin, but only when they are found out. They are ashamed not of having offended God, but of having lost face before men. Let me ask this question this evening. What is the greatest restraining influence on your life when temptations suggest themselves to you? Is it that this action would hurt the holy heart of God? Or is it, what will people think or say about me if this action is uncovered, made public? Our answer will tell us a very great deal about our spirituality or our lack of it. As Jacob entered his father's tent, disguised as his brother, he was about to discover something of the awful momentum of sin. How does the rhyme go? Oh, what a tangled web we weave, when first we practice to deceive. Jacob is slowly drawn into this web, first by impersonating his brother, then you will find him lying to his father, and you will also find him implicating God in the whole affair. How are you back so quickly? Oh, your God has blessed me. Thank God for it. God's involved in all of this. He's getting in deeper and deeper. But he is also discovering that with practice, the sin of deception becomes easier and easier. He's becoming quite proficient. Sin breeds sin. Sin is the natural expression of our fallen nature. Do you see yourself in the mirror of Jacob's life? Do we have a nature which reflects his? William Golding discovered that when he wrote, I know I am born with a great capacity for evil and a warped ability to enjoy it. Jacob was to discover that the victory of sin will always make a person a loser. There's a paradox. Sin's victory creates losers. The triumph of his ingenious deceit was short-lived. He becomes the victim of his own deceit. As the consequences of his action begin to press home, his brother's action stirring up this plot to take his life, being sent away from home. If he knew insecurity while he was at home with the family, then that sense of insecurity intensified a hundredfold as he found himself removed from it. No act of ours is wise which ignores remote consequences. And sin always does that. Sin is short-sighted. It sees only today, or at the most tomorrow, but seldom beyond that. And the pleasure of sin, as Jacob was to discover, is never worth the price paid for it. Jacob planned and plotted to steal something which God intended to give him as a grace gift. And at the end of the expenditure of so much effort and energy, he is left with absolutely nothing to show for it. His exile would rob him of the enjoyment of his birthright. It would be more than 20 years before he entered into that enjoyment, not until he had learned to turn his back on self-effort and self-confidence and learn to live in childlike dependence upon God. Now, all of the appalling intrigue and deception of this domestic situation has a remarkable twist in its tale. We have described the actions of the four principal characters. But in verse 33, the curtains are pulled back and the principal character comes into view. Esau returns with a wild game, in anticipation of his father's blessing, and Isaac, who has just blessed the disguised Jacob, asks, "Who are you?" And when Esau identified himself, we read, Isaac trembled violently. The awful realization dawned upon Isaac that he had tried to compete with God and his purposes and had failed, and indeed would always fail until he surrendered his own defiant will to God. And the folly of his action begins to grip his heart, and it causes him to tremble. I have been fighting against God. This incident is not far removed, you know, from Paul's encounter with the risen Jesus on the Damascus Road, when he discovered that all of his energy and all of his effort was being directed not for God, but against God and his purposes. And some commentators certainly believe that this was the point of Isaac's conversion. Or, at the very least, a life crisis experience which turned him for the first time into an obedient servant of God. And what was effected in an instant in the life of Isaac took a whole night of wrestling on the part of Jacob some 20 years later. The proof of Isaac's transformation is found in the words of verse 33. I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed. He is saying, I can clearly see now the purposes of God for your younger brother. I now submit myself to the plan of God and assure you that nothing at all can thwart it. I have tried, I've done all in my power to thwart the purposes of God and have failed. God has decided to bless your brother Jacob, and he shall surely be blessed. If we need to understand the colossal significance of this statement in the life of Isaac, then we need to turn to Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 20. In this chapter, which highlights the spiritual pilgrimage of so many of God's saints, the writer has only one thing to say about Isaac. It is nevertheless an important thing. From all of his life, he picks out and plucks up one incident, and it's this. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau with regard to the future. This was the spiritual highlight of his life. For 137 years he had fought God's will. But once his will was broken, Isaac discovered all that it meant to be a man of faith whose life was surrendered to God. We have looked in many mirrors this evening, but in looking at this final mirror, let me ask both young and old alike here this evening, are you surrendered to God? Has your will submitted to His? Has your selfish heart been broken? For you see, before there can be any spiritual growth or significant spiritual service in your life and in mine, we need to know something of the earthquake which caused all of Isaac's self-will and defiance to crumble to such an extent that it is recorded in the Richter scale of heaven. What an earthquake! Yet out of such an earthquake, God can bring great blessing and fruitfulness in our lives. That's what it means to say to God, we surrender all. Perhaps we should be singing that.